Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Would you rather be loved or respected? Kind of depends on the context, doesn't it? I mean, with family and friends, you'd probably choose being loved. Although, for parents, that's a tough call. Fact is, getting both can be a very tricky thing. NBC's hit comedy series The Office was built around that very idea. You know, the boss who wants his employees to love him instead of just respecting him. Well, we're going to talk about a band that's gotten a lot of love, but until last week, very little respect. We've also got live music from Roy Nathanson, founder of the Jazz Passengers here in New York, a group that has numbered Deborah Harry and Elvis Costello among its ranks. Roy's new project combines poetry, jazz, and beatboxing. And the bass guitarist who became a city councilman without losing his indie roots. But let's begin with last week's induction ceremony for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Tom Morello of Rage Against the Machine took the stage at the Barclays Center in Brooklyn to introduce a band that released its first albums 40 years ago.
They are four of the most recognizable faces on the planet and one of the most iconic and badass bands of all time.
Yes, Kiss is in the Hall of Fame. They've got 28 gold records, more than any other American band, and they've sold more than 40 million copies just in the U.S. So Kiss has never lacked for love. Now, though, they have a modicum of respect and just a soupçon of controversy. The Hall announced that only the four original members of Kiss would be inducted. Two of them haven't been in the band for years, so co-founders and current members Gene Simmons and Paul Stanley refused to perform with their former bandmates at the ceremony. Now, however you feel about the drama, or the band in general, there's no denying that Kiss played a role in shaping the history of rock and roll in the late 20th century, with their immediately recognizable costumes and over-the-top performances. They were a touring juggernaut, and that led to the explosive success of their live albums, with songs like Strutter. Detroit Rock City. And of course, today in the studio, I'm joined by one of Kiss's founding members, Paul Stanley, known by the Kiss Army as Starchild. His recently released memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. Paul, welcome to Soundcheck.
Pleasure to be here.
I want to start the way you start in the book, with you kind of facing the music, be that face in the mirror, putting on the famous Starchild makeup. I mean, you can spend hours sort of parsing the layers of meaning behind masks. How much of who you are as a performer and as a person is represented in that ritual of putting on the makeup?
I think the two are very integrated at this point, but initially I have to say, without even being conscious of it, I was creating a character to live behind. To this day, that character exists, but perhaps much more comfortably with the me that's offstage. I was born deaf in one ear. I have what was called a microtia, which is a condition where you virtually don't have an ear. You have a piece of misshapen cartilage. And not being able to hear on one side makes for a lot of vulnerability and a sense of unease because you can't triangulate. So you can't tell direction of sound, which is much more problematic than one might think.
Now, at what point did you know that it was not just a physical deformity, but an auditory one as well. At what point did you know that you were not hearing what you were supposed to hear?
Well, I don't have an ear canal on that side, so there's no opening. From the time I was little, I couldn't say that I was different than anyone else in terms of what they heard. You don't miss what you don't know other people have. However, the impact of not being able to hear was palpable.
Hmm.
Although I couldn't define what was different, the fact was how I heard made it difficult and problematic in a lot of situations. Plus, having a birth defect means you're under constant scrutiny. People tend to objectify, you know, people who look different and forget that there are people there.
Mm.
So that only compounded everything else.
But it does make it sort of surprising that of all the things, of all the fields of endeavor that you would have gone into, that you chose one so closely tied to hearing,
mm-hmm.
To music, of course. You talk about in the book about some surprisingly diverse musical experiences as a kid, mm-hmm. from Beethoven's Emperor Concerto mm-hmm. to, you know, early rock and roll.
Mm-hmm.
Was music, I mean, at what point, you talk about getting your first guitar when you're like 13.
13, yeah.
You know? So at what point did that seem to be a realistic avenue for you to pursue?
I don't know that it was ever a realistic avenue for me to pursue, because people will always tell you that it's impossible. You learn, hopefully, that the people who tell you what's impossible are invariably the ones who failed.
Hmm.
However, as a very young boy, music connected with me on a level that I didn't even understand. The emotional connection of any of the arts can be so thrilling and enthralling and inspiring. Hearing the Emperor Concerto as a kid was monumental to me. It was so majestic and so powerful. Lerner and Lowe, Rodgers and Hart, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Frank Sinatra, Tony Bennett, the list goes on, Puccini, Verdi. I was very fortunate to be around a lot of music in my house, and what my parents didn't give me, they blessed me with an appreciation of all the arts.
Hmm. So a lot of the names you just mentioned are great names in music theater, where it's not just how the music sounds, but the way it's presented,
mm-hmm.
which would come back, it brings us right back to the way Kiss mm-hmm. would present itself on stage. How did Kiss go from being a band to being, let's face it, more than a band?
Mm-hmm. I tend to say that bands make music and phenomenons impact society. So I think the idea was to be the band we never saw. We were living in a time where many bands thought they were doing the audience a favor by showing up. And that's so peculiar, because I paid for a ticket.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm owed your respect and the best that you can possibly give me. I expect you to look good, to sound good, and to show appreciation for me. And then I'll show appreciation for you. So in essence, we came out of the audience, grabbed the instruments and said, let's show you how it's done. And the look was an outgrowth of that. And a lot of the British bands, which I identified with much more than the American bands, Anglophile that I am, I saw all these bands that had a cohesive group image, which was lacking very much in the American bands. I wasn't interested in seeing an overweight guy with pigtails in a band. I wanted to see a rock star.
We are talking with Paul Stanley, founding member of KISS, and of course known fondly by KISS fans as Star Child. KISS celebrating its 40th anniversary this year and, of course, induction into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And Paul Stanley's memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. You meet Gene Simmons early on.
Mm-hmm.
You're both in Queens. I didn't see a mention of what neighborhood in Queens.
We met at a friend's house in Inwood in Washington Heights. I was living in Kew Garden Hills,
okay,
and he was living right near the Long Island Expressway. I'm not quite sure what we would call the area, but it was close by.
Like Rego Park or something.
Yeah,
more
Flushing.
Okay.
Yeah, so we met at a common friend's house and didn't hit it off at first, certainly, but we played each other a song or two, and I swore I would never play with the guy again. Nothing's changed.
40 years of, I'll never play with the guy again.
But 44 years at this point speaks volumes. We have a terrific relationship, and it's been volatile.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I've never doubted was his integrity. And we've always been there more or less for each other. I've sometimes doubted or questioned his decisions, and his input always hasn't been 100%. And yet here we are 44 years later.
Right. And the guy knows how to apologize. There's one point in the book where you're doing a record and he's just kind of checked out and he sends you, is it a Porsche?
Yeah.
To say he's so sorry?
Well, it's a nice start, but more than a car, I want a companion. I mm-hmm. want a partner. The car can't write songs. The car can't commiserate and talk with me about things that are going on. It was a nice gesture,
yeah,
but it's certainly no substitute.
So when you were in your mid-20s, things are really beginning. That rocket ship is beginning to take
mm-hmm.
off.
Mm-hmm.
There's a famous story about the composer Philip Glass.
Mm.
You know, he did his opera,
mm-hmm.
Einstein on the
mm-hmm.
Beach, landmark work at the Metropolitan Opera.
Mm-hmm.
The next week, he's back driving his cab,
mm.
and a woman
mm-hmm.
gets in the car, sees his picture and his name, and says, young man, do you know you have the same name as a famous composer?
Mm-hmm.
So your days of driving people in a taxi
mm.
to Madison Square Garden,
yes,
then replaced by people taking taxis to Madison Square Garden to see you,
yes,
on that stage.
I, as a cab driver, I drove a couple to Madison Square Garden to see Elvis Presley. And I sat in that front of the cab and thought to myself, one of these days, people will be coming to Madison Square Garden to see me. And it wasn't that many years later.
Well, and not for the only time in the book, you get the sense of you, Paul Stanley, when it begins to happen for you, thinking, oh, God, don't take this away from me
mm-hmm.
now. You know, that worry that mm-hmm. it could all come crashing down at any moment. And it seems like with the song Room Service, that's sort of getting to this kind of set of feelings at this point in your career.
Well, Room Service was a song about reveling in the moment of being the king, you know, to be able to have whatever I want when I want it, to celebrate life sexually and in front of these large crowds musically. It was everything I dreamed and more. When you fantasize what success is in the music field, as I imagine in many, it's limited by your comprehension. As you finally start to experience it, the floodgates open and you see it so, so much more.
Mm-hmm.
It's overwhelming, but at the same time, it's also invigorating and it's a rush unlike anything else.
Room service,
baby, I could use a meal.
Room service,
could you want to?
Written in the first flush of success, Kiss with Room Service from their 1975 album Dressed to Kill. My guest on Soundcheck is Paul Stanley, star child to Kiss fans, and his new memoir is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. 1975 in New York, you know, punk is just, I mean, the first bands are playing at CBGBs, but the New York Dolls have been on the scene. We were really in the
midst of what they were calling the glitter movement, you know, glam, so to speak. We were really not part of the scene. We were the black sheep of the black sheep. While other bands were spending their time in clubs looking like bands, we were in a loft trying to sound like a band. So we didn't have much in common. We didn't go to Max's Kansas City. We weren't at the Mercer Arts Center. We were locked away 5 or 7 days a week trying to form and formulate what we were going to be.
Mm-hmm. And the results, this album, Dressed to Kill, contained, you know, some massive songs, Rock and Roll All Night, which has become a kind of rock and roll anthem, and which has given rise to one of the great Mondegreens or misheard lyrics of all time, which is, I want to rock and roll all night.
And part of every day.
And part of every day.
Well, that may be healthier, but I don't know how many people.
Because, you know, that laundry isn't going to do itself.
No. Yeah, I see the practicality in it, but it's not quite as much fun.
You show us everything you got. You keep on dancing and the room gets hot. Drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy. You say you wanna go for a spin. The party's just begun, we'll let you in. You drive us wild, we'll drive you crazy.
When you were writing that song, no one ever thinks, well, if I write this line this way, people are going to mishear it as that.
No, never. Any more than the Hendrix song, Purple Haze, Excuse Me While I Kiss This Guy.
Right, or There's a Bathroom on the Right, the Creedence Clearwater Revival song.
Yeah, so.
Although John Fogerty has admitted, here and elsewhere, that he will occasionally sing the line, There's a Bathroom on the Right, just to kind of screw with his listeners' minds.
Fogerty runs by my house almost daily.
Really?
He jogs. It's God love him, man. The guy is gallant in his running every day. But I said to him, John, I see you running, and I want to open the door and say, come on, get in, because he looks like he's about to keel over.
Well, you look like you're in pretty good shape, do you?
I mean,
you know, being on the road, first of all, is a test of stamina and endurance as well as musicality.
Well, what we do demands athleticism and endurance and a cardio level that a lot of other people don't have to adhere to or it doesn't necessitate. So I'm in damn good shape.
Yeah.
And
so what's your routine? What do you do?
I'm now doing something that I hadn't done before. I go to a class called Cardio Bar, which is a dancer workout, which was started by a man who was in an accident, had to stop his ballet career. And it's the routine that he used to rehabilitate himself. And I go 3-4 times a week. My wife goes, and it's great to be in a room full of great-looking women and know that you don't want to look like a jerk. So it motivates me to do things that I might find physically impossible.
And then when you get out on stage, you can still do all the moves?
Totally, totally, totally. It's a terrific thing to be at this point in my life. 40 years ago, I couldn't have imagined it, but to be 61, I believe I'm 61. I get it mixed up sometimes. But to be 61 and be out there and enjoying the moments and reveling in the glory in front of 10 to 100,000 people. It's terrific.
Paul Stanley is my guest on Soundcheck, founding member of KISS, known to KISS fans as Starchild. KISS is celebrating its 40th anniversary this season, touring around. There's Paul Stanley's new memoir called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. It is out now. And there is the matter of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction. You guys have been eligible for, like, what, 15 years now?
It's going on 15 years.
I mean, is it a bittersweet moment? I mean, is it, you know, is it justice deferred? Is it justice denied kind of thing?
Honestly, it's not bittersweet because there's no vindication in it to me. All it is a certain closure for fans, and I'm pleased for that because it means something to the fans, to people who've championed us against odds. It's a sense of validation. If they understood, and they do more and more because I'm fairly vocal about it, what the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame actually is, it doesn't hold quite as much weight. It's a small boys club. It's not the Hall of Fame of the people. That's why when you hear about who's getting inducted half the time, you don't know who they are because it's not based on popularity or how much you may have influenced your field. It's purely based on favoritism and personal interests. Did I make myself clear?
Yes. And I guess my follow-up question then would be, why accept it?
Because it's important to the fans. And I understand it totally. And I would consider that to be disrespectful to them. It would also be disrespectful to not be honest with them. There's no reason for former members to put on a uniform that I think that they denigrated or compromised for the name of nostalgia, or certainly not for why would the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame be somebody who I would do that for when they are taking us in grudgingly and only the original four members, when we have members who played on multi-platinum albums, did million-selling tours, and yet the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is making it the smallest pill they can swallow because it's very bitter for them.
Well, like it or not, Paul Stanley and the rest of KISS are now in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony was last week, April 10th, and Paul Stanley's new memoir out now is called Face the Music, A Life Exposed. Thank you for sharing some of it with us.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Coming up, as a New York City Council member, Stephen Levin represents some Brooklyn neighborhoods particularly known for their nightlife. He's also a bass player. Councilman Levin of the 33rd District joins us with a Pick 3 playlist of favorite tracks next on Soundcheck. And later, live music from New York sax player and band leader Roy Nathanson. This is Soundcheck.
Three, that's a magic number.
Three.
It's the magic number.
Time now for another installment in our series Pick 3, in which special guests bring in three favorite tracks. And joining us today is Stephen Levin, New York City Council member for the 33rd District in downtown Brooklyn. Steve, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John.
You're on our radar not just because you're a member of the City Council here in New York, but a musician as well.
That is right.
You're a bass player?
I'm a bass player. Yep.
How much bass playing do you have a chance to do with your day job now?
Not much anymore. I was able to, a couple of years ago, do a reunion show with one of my old bands. We played at Brooklyn Bowl, and it really, you know, brought back some of the glory. But unfortunately, I don't get to play as much as I would like to.
Yeah.
But I have a guitar in the house and a piano, and I get to noodle around here.
Well, I mean, and certainly in your district, you must have the chance to hear a ton of music. Now,
yes.
Tell us the 33rd City Council District. What neighborhoods are you representing?
So I represent Greenpoint and Williamsburg, downtown Brooklyn, Dumbo, Brooklyn Heights, Gowanus area, Borham Hill. So I have not only a ton of of musicians. I mean, I have a lot of musicians in the district, but also a lot of venues. And so any given night, you can go to parts of Williamsburg and Greenpoint and see great bands.
All right, so now you mentioned not too long ago reuniting with your college band. That was Stylophone?
Stylophone, yes.
And that sort of links us to the first song in your pick three, doesn't it?
Yes, it does, yeah. The name of the song is Battersea Blues, which is by a band called Acrylics. Acrylics singer slash guitar player is a guy named Jason Klauber, who I was in a band called Stylophone with back about 10 years ago. And the band disbanded, and a couple of guys, one guy went to play with MGMT, plays mm-hmm. drums for MGMT, and Jason started a band with his significant other, Molly Shea, and Acrylics is the band, and they have released a couple of albums, and this is from a forthcoming album that doesn't have a title just yet.
Wow, okay, so a sneak preview from mm-hmm. Stephen Levin, New York City councilman, and some music from the band Acrylics.
I don't need your shame for the violence dripping off my teeth. Across that bridge into Battersea, the power station on the animal sleep. How do I run from the devil inside me? How do I run from the devil inside me? How do I run from the devil inside me? How do I run from the devil inside me?
That's a little bit of music from a band called Acrylics, Brooklyn-based, song called Battersea Blues, a new track from a forthcoming and as yet untitled record by Acrylics, led by guitarist and singer Jason Klauber, with whom my guest, Stephen Levin, once had a band, the band called Stylophone. These days, Steve is New York City council member for the 33rd District, which includes most of the music-infested regions of Brooklyn these days. You mentioned when Stylophone broke up, you know, Jason went his way. You said the drummer went and played with MGMT?
Will Berman is the current drummer for MGMT. Yeah.
Is this where the persistent rumor has come from that you, Stephen Levin, are a member of MGMT?
I think that's where it came from, yes.
And are you willing to now state categorically in front of our audience that you are not, in fact, in MGMT?
I am not, nor have I ever been actually in MGMT. But they're friends, and Stylophone came from kind of the same musical circle at Wesleyan College, Wesleyan University in Connecticut, where MGMT came out. We played some early shows together.
And what was that musical circle? I mean, what kind of music were you listening to as a teenager?
You know, I came out actually as a big Deadhead and listening to Bob Dylan and Neil Young. It kind of, when I went to college, you know, a lot of other stuff, a lot of other influences came about, and, you know, more British stuff. And I think when those guys at Wesleyan were listening to a lot of David Bowie, a lot of, you know, and then kind of stuff like Thin Lizzy, and that got kind of all merged together, and it became a real rock and roll smorgasbord.
And now you're an indie rock guy.
That's right, yes.
Representing Williamsburg and Greenpoint and parts of Gowanus, where all the music seems to be happening. So there have got to be, I mean, you mentioned all the musicians, all the music venues in your area. There's got to be a lot of issues revolving around music and music venues that you have to deal with.
Oh, absolutely. Now, right, I'm on the receiving end of a lot of phone calls, usually from neighbors who have complaints about, you know, shows going late or shows that are not necessarily sanctioned, you know, where they're happening in DIY spots and or on rooftops and things like that.
Well, now, what do you do when that happens, when your sympathy may lie with the musician, but your job requires you to uphold the letter of the law?
It's a judgment call. I usually take it case by case. You know, if venues or musicians are not being conscientious of their neighbors, they need to be reminded that that's the right thing to do. So if it's a compelling case, I'll usually side with the neighbor that, you know, mm-hmm. you can't be playing music at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Right. your death metal band at 3 a.m. on a Tuesday morning is just not going to fly.
Not appropriate.
All right. Stephen Levin is New York City Council member for the 33rd District. He's sharing a Pick 3 playlist with us here in the Soundcheck studio. Tell me about the 1 and 9s. They're not from your district, are you?
They are not from my district, but the 1 and 9s I also have a personal connection with.
Is this how the city government works?
Yes.
Just you play your friend's music? And
well, it's actually, there's some of my Acrylics and 1 and 9s are like really some of the bands that I actually love listening to. Jeff Marino is the guitar player and singer, along with his wife, Vera Sousa Marino, and they're from Jersey City. I grew up with Jeff, and Jeff and I were in our first band together. We were like a dead cover band, and Jeff was a really
in
good...
In Jersey City?
In a little bit further out in Plainfield, New Jersey.
Okay.
Jeff was a guitar player, and our other friend who's playing drums on this is a guy named Travis Ferrara. He was also playing guitar, and I was like the least talented guitar player, so that's how I became a bass player. But they have, Jeff's got a great affinity for R&B, and this is a track called Tell Me that was a single that they released a couple of years ago, and it's got a great background or backup singers, the Catamounts. They were a doo-wop group that was associated with Catamount Records, a guy named Stan Krause in Jersey City. You know, he first broke the Persuasions, which were then signed by Frank Zappa in the early 70s. The Catamounts are actually singing backup here on this track, and it's a really fun track, a real R&B send-up.
From the 1 and 9s, the song's called Tell Me.
Darling, tell me, like you said you would. Tell me all is good. Don't break my heart. Darling, tell me, like I know you can. I'm your only man. We'll never part. 'Cause
tomorrow
could be too late. Let's get it straight. Let's not waste our time. 'Cause I love you. All the little things you do. You may not think it's true. You'll see we'll be fine.
Tell Me is the name of the song from a band out of Jersey City called the 1 and 9s, picked for us by Stephen Levin, the New York City councilman who represents the 33rd District and is representing for some of his musical friends and others in a Pick 3 playlist here in the Soundcheck studio. So you mentioned, you know, you got to play the bass because
yes.
you were the second or third best guitarist in your band.
Third best out of three, yes.
As you learned the instrument, did you have favorite bass players?
Yeah, I always loved Donald Duck Dunn from Booker T and the MGs
mm-hmm.
or Larry Graham from Sly and the Family Stone was a great bass player. I was, as I said, a deadhead, so Phil Lesh was always kind of like a great bass player that I always looked up to. And you know, it takes a while when you're younger to kind of understand what a bass is supposed to do.
What does younger mean to you? How old? I mean, are you the youngest city councilman?
I'm not. I'm 33, and we just, in this past year, elected a whole slew of young folks that are now in the city council. I think the youngest guy is 25.
Really?
Richie Torres from the Bronx. But there's a couple of other guys in their 20s or early 30s. And they really breathed a lot of life into the city council.
Is there anybody there you can talk music with?
Yeah. We actually, there's some great music lovers in the city council. There's actually, we had a musician, Peter Vallone, was a guitar player. He now left.
Really?
And he was actually, he would do a band for his like birthday performance and stuff with former police commissioner Ray Kelly. They would jam out. Ray Kelly was a drummer.
Had no idea.
Yeah, you wouldn't know.
Would never have thought it.
Right. But Jumaane Williams, actually, I think of I always hear him singing in the hallways at the city hall, city council office building.
Now you you were part of our recently concluded instrument drive, the WQXR instrument drive that our classical sister station was a big part of.
Yes.
You donated a trumpet.
I donated a trumpet that was laying around the house.
So did you play the trumpet at one point?
I was never a trumpet player. I was a saxophone player. But I grew up playing in my middle school and high school band, and it was such a great informative experience. And actually, I learned to play the saxophone on a school-issued saxophone. And one thing that I do at the city council is I serve on the education committee, and one thing that's become clear over the last couple of years is that the city's allocation, budget allocation for musical instruments has dropped off by 85% since 2006. I mean, we are funding 15% of what we used to fund for musical instruments. And so the recent drive by QXR and WNYC, as well as things like VH1 Save the Music, are actually like our main source of musical instruments for kids in New York City public schools. And I've seen some amazing concert bands and jazz bands and guitar bands in New York City in our public schools. One in particular in my district, IS318, they have one of the most amazing bands I've ever seen. I went to a concert a couple years ago. They did a Journey medley that brought me to tears. I mean, really. They have amazing, amazing stuff and amazing talent in these middle schoolers. And
it's just a matter of getting instruments into their hands.
Absolutely. And it's fostering that creativity because kids have amazing musical ability. They just have to hone it.
Stephen Levin's with us on Soundcheck, New York City Council member for the 33rd District, which includes much of downtown Brooklyn, Williamsburg, Greenpoint, and places like that. And so far, your Pick 3 playlist has skewed recent,
yes.
But you're going to go back a few years for this last one.
Yes. The last track that I'm putting forward is a song called There's a Rugged Road by Judy Sill. Judy Sill is a little-known singer-songwriter from the early 70s, you know, L.A. scene. Laurel Canyon. She was the first artist signed to David Geffen's Asylum Records.
Really?
She didn't really have any big hits, but her second album is an album called Heart Food, and this is the opening track from that, and it's something that I've just been listening to over the last couple of years, and it's some of the most amazing music, and she had a really tough life, a really hard-scrabble life. But her music has this real brilliance. It's kind of got elements of Bach almost and folk, but it's got unity to it or presence that you don't necessarily hear all the time. And so I thought it would be great to get her out into the airwaves and her music to as many people as can hear it.
All right, Judy Sill from the album Heart Food. We'll hear a song called There's a Rugged Road. Steve, it's a great pleasure having you with us on Soundcheck today.
Thanks, John. This is great.
There's a rugged road on the prairie, stretching all across the last frontier. There are stranger stripes, solitary. Blessed is the lonesome pioneer. Roll on, roll on. Night birds are flying. Come on, the light is gone. Hope slowly dying. Tell me how you come riding through. Still surveying the miles yet to run on a long and lonely road to kingdom.
A song from the late singer-songwriter Judy Sill that's called There's a Rugged Road from her second album, Heart Food, released in 1973 on Asylum Records. Part of the Pick 3 playlist from New York City Council member Stephen Levin of the 33rd District in Brooklyn. Up next, New York sax player Roy Nathanson and his ensemble Sotto Voce join us to perform live. That's next on Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Boy, it almost sounds like they're about to break into the Beatles, and I love her, doesn't it? Well, that's Roy Nathanson for you. The Brooklyn songwriter, sax player, and bandleader always seems to be suggesting one musical path and then heading off in another, often taking people like Elvis Costello and Deborah Harry with him. His current band, called Sotto Voce, combines jazz, storytelling, and beatboxing. There is no drummer here in the studio, despite what your ears may tell you. Here, live on Soundcheck, is Roy Nathanson and Sotto Voce with a live performance of the title track from their brand new album called Complicated Day. Thank you.
Another complicated day where I dream away the hours, never knowing when my star will fall. Warts and all down, I sing the corners of a grand old song where the hero just limps along, always pining about a heart unhinged, passion dim down. Now another twilight moon starts teary-eyed in this morning rush. Wished I hadn't said those words last night that drag your pure heart.
Good stuff from Roy Nathanson and the band Sotto Voce live in the Soundcheck studio, and the title track from their brand new album called Complicated Day. Roy Nathanson on saxophone, Curtis Faulks, the trombonist, the lead vocals on that track, Tim Kaya on bass, some backing vocals, Jerome Harris on guitar, more backing vocals, Napoleon Maddox doing the beatboxing, and Sam Bardfeld playing the violin. By the end of the day, you'll have heard all six of these musicians singing, background at least. Roy, good to have you back with us on Soundcheck.
It's nice to be here.
So you wrote the lyrics for that in addition to the music.
Right, yeah.
You've been telling us stories for a long time now, going back to, you know, your sort of concept record, Fire at Keaton's Bar and Grill, all right, those years ago. The last album, Subway Moon, was a kind of noirish take on the New York City subways and stuff. Is this a concept album?
This was supposed to be really, more than anything, this was really a song album. Just really, I just felt like over these years, I've been combining so, you know, text and music and different kinds, really telling stories and finding different ways to combine words and music in ways that weren't really songs exactly, that were kind of constructions.
And I should mention, you actually did a radio play on WNYC.
Right.
What was it, back in the late 80s or
90s? No, it was 2001. It was,
was it that with, recent?
Yeah, next big thing we in that show. And no, but I was always looking, also with the Jazz Passengers, when Curtis and I had, we would always sort of try to combine stories with the music in some kind of way. And as time's gone on, you know, and I went and got a master's in poetry, and so I sort of got very involved in separating words and music. And, you know, but the ultimate thing has still always been storytelling in some way to me. And as the band, as this sort of Ocho band has congealed, and the guys are really kind of wonderful singers, they're all players and singers in the band, you know, I got closer and closer to really wanting to have them, each song, them really be songs.
Right,
you know, that
right.
they came into their own as their own little constructions of songs. So I don't know if it's a concept album as much as it's an album of songs about the experiences that I've had in the last few years.
Yeah. And in addition to your own songs, there are three very carefully, it seems, chosen covers that kind of fit into, if there is a narrative here, that kind of fit into the idea of a long and complicated day.
It's been a hard couple of years, the last 2 years or so. I mean, I feel like in my own life, I'd had so many things happen when I was younger that were rough, and I talked about it in my radio play and stuff. And I feel like in my modern life, I have a great family, and things were going great, and things are still good, but in fact, came to be some hard things. You know, I lost some people and things like this, and that hadn't happened for a long time. And sort of, I was revisited to the darker things, and the stories all have to do with like this one about raising a kid, how hard that is, and my son actually sings on one of them in the meantime, and so it has a kind of a quality of just telling my song stories.
Right, but there's the Isaac Hayes song "Do Your Thing," which is kind of like.
Right,
that's,
I think
that's what you do.
Right, exactly. So the Isaac Hayes song is really a kind of a theme song.
Yeah.
And, you know, I felt it's exactly what this band does.
And was I hearing things in the song "And," or was there really a nod to the Beatles?
There's definitely a nod to the Beatles, but without publishing.
Busted, Roy Nathanson.
Because I mean, actually, really what that's about is the poem. I wrote a poem for my wife called "And." And that's the end poem
of the song. Yeah.
And so really, in a sense, what the song is, it was a takeoff a little bit on the Beatles thing with "and." It's really "and I love and," and I love the word "and."
Uh-huh.
So it's "and I love," instead of "I love her," I love "and," right? So that's, but also, Tim did a lot of arranging in this. Mm-hmm. Tim, he arranged the "I Can See Clearly Now" thing.
Completely. The Johnny Nash song,
right.
Yeah.
Which also somehow has a celebratory thing that's the opposite of a lot of stuff.
Right. So it's like, at the end of a hard and complicated day, I actually can see where I'm going.
Exactly, right. It has that.
The album's called Complicated Day, brand new from Roy Nathanson and the band Sotto Voce. Why that name, Sotto Voce? The idea that you're lowering your voice and speaking sotto voce?
I mean, I think that after the Passengers, after Debbie left the band... And,
this is Deborah Harry
and your old
band, the Jazz Passengers.
And I went back and I started teaching, and my life kind of calmed down, and I wasn't touring as much, and I was really looking for a way to not necessarily have stars in the band and just tell my stories and tell them in a multi-layered way with words, sounds, and all. And so that I feel like the voice, is the instruments, is the beatbox, is the, you know, and to find, it's really to look for language in a way to tell stories that has different oral, things that fit what my heart, you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that you know, the song Complicated Day is just very, it just sort of invites you in as opposed to like screaming out at you, listen to me, look at me. We're speaking with Roy Nathanson and hearing the band Sotto Voce. They're playing for us here in the Soundcheck studio today, and we're going to listen next to the lead-off track from the new album, Complicated Day. It's called Simon.
Simon says, go fishing. Simon says, go fishing. Go
fishing. Because folks will be huffing and puffing. They'll be swimming hard to fight in the world. They'll be kicking and scratching. They'll be biting and hacking. The one you hook, she'll be ready to learn.
Simon says, go fishing. Simon says, go fishing. Simon says, go fishing. Go fishing.
Then you'll both go about your business. You'll be raising guppies and rushing to work. You'll be passing each other just like ships in the night, forgetting the way things work. Yeah, you know, so maybe that's the time to call Simon. Say, Simon, won't you come on home? And then pray he'll run back before your fish swims free, or you'll be rowing your boat all alone.
Simon says, go fishing. Simon says, go fishing. Simon says, go fishing. 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 Go fishing.
The song's called Simon, and it's from Roy Nathanson and the band Sotto Voce, performing live here in the Soundcheck studio, songs from the brand new album called Complicated Day. Roy Nathanson and Sotto Voce in our Soundcheck studio, and Roy, always a pleasure to have you here with us in the Soundcheck studio, and thanks for being with us.
Thanks so much, John. It'd be great.
And we find ourselves some kind of tree. And sit beneath its sails. Let a warm wind carry you home.
Before we go tonight, I want to mention that the New York jazz world has lost a truly unique voice. Fred Ho, a baritone sax player, composer, and band leader, died this past weekend after a long battle with cancer. He was just 56 years old. And if you knew Fred Ho, you knew that there simply wasn't anyone quite like him. He made ambitious, multimedia stage works that combined music, martial arts, dance, and visual art. He was deeply influenced by African and Asian traditions, and his work had a sharp political edge. That's just the tip of the iceberg, though. You can read my remembrance of Fred Ho on soundcheck.org. Here's a little bit of his piece, Deadly She-Wolf Assassin at Armageddon. That's an excerpt from Deadly She-Wolf Assassin at Armageddon by the late sax player, composer, and political activist Fred Ho. Fred died this Saturday at the age of 56. Tomorrow on the show, the first of a two-part special from our recent mini-festival that we called Gigstock, inspired by our daily gig alerts. Gigstock brought together some great bands for music and conversation. Tomorrow, a lineup curated by the indie concert site Oh My Rockness, with two New York bands giving us sneak previews of their upcoming albums. We'll hear The Pains of Being Pure at Heart and the indie punk band Parquet Courts. That's tomorrow on the program. That does it for today. I'm John Schaefer. This is Soundcheck.